Hi, this is Tracy Hales Bass with Right on Four Corners on KSJE, the cultural beacon of the Four Corners. Today, I'm talking with Micah Hackler, the author of the Sheriff Lansing Mysteries, and especially about his new book, Moon of the Blue Mustang. Hi, Micah.
Hi, Tracy.
Well, I really enjoyed reading Moon of the Blue Mustang and discovering the Sheriff Lansing Mysteries.
I'm partial to it myself.
How many Sheriff Lansing Mysteries are there now?
There have been 8 published. Book 9, Badlands, is going through the editing process, I believe. And then I am about almost at the halfway point on the follow-on, which is Cerro Grande.
Oh.
Which is about the Cerro Grande fire around Los Alamos in the year 2000.
And with each one of these, I haven't read the others, but Moon of the Blue Mustang, and from what I gather, there's different tribes that you deal with in each one.
Exactly. Just going through it, the Legend of the Dead, I use Anasazi and Zuni legends. Coyote Returns, I use Navajo. The Shadow Catcher is Jicarilla Apache. And believe it or not, the Dark Canyon is Mayan. So Lansing went on a hiatus till 2018 when my new publisher, Speaking Volumes, called me up and asked me for permission to release the first 4 novels as Kindle books. And I said, absolutely. And I said, by the way, would you be interested in me writing some more books? And they said, sure. So since 98, I've written 5 books. So the new books are the Mutes is Apache. I veered away from the next one, The Owl and the Raven, is a little bit Apache, but what I went on with that one was Mexican legends.
Oh.
And I went with, dealt with brujas and curanderas and things like that in that one. But the interesting thing is it's also a story about redemption. As you noticed in Moon of the Blue Mustang, I've got all sorts of stories that go through the
the
book. And so one of the sub-stories or subplots in The Owl and the Raven is a cartel soldier who discovers he's raised on the streets, never went to church or anything like that, and through a series of incidents, he ends up at a monastery in Mexico and becomes a Christian. And he transfers to the parent monastery in San Felipe County, and that's how he gets involved with Lansing. So I've got Catholicism and Mexican legends and that sort of stuff going in that one. Then next book, Weeping Woman, is Tiwa, Pueblo Indians in San Juan Pueblo outside of my mythical Segovia, which in real life, if you pull out a map and look at things, Segovia in real life is going to be Española. And I've only had one person criticize me for making a fictitious county of San Felipe County. And that guy was from New Mexico and was so incensed that I had made up a mythical county that he threw the book away and wouldn't let any of his friends read it. But
it's a fiction.
So, exactly. Exactly. And the series was an accident anyway. I wrote the first book, and the working title of it was Anasazi. And it was supposed to be an explanation of what happened to the Anasazi Indians and things like that. And I wrote it as just a standalone book. And I managed to get an agent, and she said, well, you know, I could sell this better if it's a series. And I said, I never thought of that. Okay, so I started thinking about, you know, what would my second book be about? And I was reading around, and I got hooked up the trickster, the coyote. And I said, that would make an interesting story if I could, tie something into it. So what it ended up was, not only is it Coyote, the mythological character in the book, but it is a young man whose father was banned from the Navajo tribe, who rediscovers his connections to the Navajo people and the fact that his father's nickname when he was growing up was Coyote.
Wow.
And so the term Coyote Returns has a dual meaning. It has to do with the mythical beast, and it has to do with a young man discovering his roots. San Jose Pueblo, the Weeping Woman, mm-hmm. and then in Moon of the Blue Mustang, as you know, I'm going back to the Jicarilla
right.
Apache people again.
You know what? Why don't you give our listeners just a quick synopsis of Moon of the Blue Mustang then?
Okay, Moon of the Blue Mustang. I always do prologues and epilogues in my books. Some people hate the fact that people do that. I like to do that. Each one's a little different. Mm-hmm. This one, Conrado Cotin, who's a grandfather, tells a story about when he was a little kid, his father has rounded up a blue mustang, who is a mythical beast in Apache mythology, and it's always coming out of the mountains and raiding the farms and taking the fillies away. So he captures the blue mustang, but the blue mustang can't be contained. It's a mythological character, and it escapes along with all the fillies that he had. And in the prologue, they say, but I know that even though my father looked for it for all of the rest of his life, he never saw it again. But he says, I know it's up there in the mountains. It's there, and it's there to protect all the animals there. So anyway, there are three or four different stories going on here.
Yes.
The first is we have cattle rustling, and one of the rustlers is killed in the course of the cattle rustling. Then we have a drug runner who is getting drugs from Mexico, and it's being delivered by an ultralight. They get the drugs, and part of the story is him just trying to get back to his base of operations just outside San Felipe County. So you've got that story going on. Then we have a couple of dead bodies at Lansing. One of his deputies discover in the town of Coheno. Lansing knows that one of the dead bodies there is the local drug distributor for the area there. The next layer of the story is two Navajo women in their 20s. One is a member of the police department, Jicarilla Police Department. Her name is Victoria Cotin, and she has a sister, Frida Cotin, who is in the conservation enforcement part of the Fish and Wildlife for the Jicarilla Apache people. And Frida actually discovers the blue mustang up in the mountains. So anyway, they are assigned to go off reservation and find out where drugs are being delivered into the station. In the course of that, Frida meets her maker. She also becomes a spirit, and the blue mustang, who had recognized her from the mountains, becomes her sponsor as a go-between her transition from life to the hereafter. But in the course of it, the guy that received the drugs down from Mexico, he's overthrown by his workers, and he's trying to escape to a safe area in Colorado that he's set aside that nobody knows about. The problem is that he's in a vehicle that the plates have expired, and he needs new plates, and he ends up stopping off in Las Palmas, the county seat, and is trying to make arrangements to get new plates, and all the time he's sinking deeper and deeper into psychosis from you know, he's constantly sniffing his cocaine.
Another thing that you have going on there is the Rangers acting beyond what they should be acting.
Yes, and I had a big criticism from a reader about that.
Really?
And that is really based on testimony from the president of the Western States Sheriff's Association.
Oh.
Where he talks about the fact that in 1993, the law enforcement officers of the Forestry Department became a separate agency mm-hmm. within the Forest Service. And they started overstepping their bounds, such as doing traffic stops
right.
off the Forest Service responsibility, and that becomes a thorn in the side to Lansing.
Yeah, he thinks they're doing things they aren't trained to do.
Exactly, exactly. And so what happens is the drug lord trying to escape after he's been overthrown kills a Forest Service employee because he thinks he's, you know, big honcho law enforcement. So we've got that level of argument going there, and that becomes critical later on when the rustlers try to rustle some cattle. They have a falling out. One of them gets killed. The other one is trying to escape back to where he's from, south of San Felipe County, and he's in a car accident. He survives, but what happens is a Forest Service person who is now not even in the forest comes upon the accident and sees a gun in the cab of the wrecked truck and decides that, oh, he's found the guy that killed the other forest ranger. This particular person doesn't know how to handle a gun and ends up killing the other rustler.
Right.
So it's a confluence of mistakes, people overstepping their bounds, and in the encounter between Sheriff Lansing and the chief of police for the Hickory Apache people, there's a discussion of the fact that one of Lansing's deputies has chased a DUI onto the reservation, and he wants to arrest him and get him convicted for DUI. And the courts throw it out because he had no jurisdiction on the Hickory Reservation,
right,
even though the other guy wasn't a tribal member. So I think one of the themes is expressed by the police chief when he says, jurisdiction is everything.
Right.
And I think that's a recurring theme in this particular book.
I think so, too.
Is people have certain responsibilities, and they're overstepping their bounds.
I really like the way that this is arranged, too, where there's short chapters and there are different points of view, and you're not sure for a while how they connect.
I made that a conscious effort when the series was revived. I wanted short chapters. I wanted each chapter to be a scene, just like it's in a movie. And each chapter, I try to only present one point of view. Like if it's Lansing dealing with somebody, I give Lansing's thoughts and Lansing's thinking. And if the other person has a reaction, I just say it in their tone of voice or in the expression on their face, but I don't tell you what they're thinking because that chapter is Lansing's point of view. I like in this book, too, the little bit of friction there is between Lansing and his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
This is a theme that I think comes through when I revise the series. The Mutes is a prequel.
Okay.
I wanted to explain why Lansing is the way Lansing is, because he's very reserved. You know, he'll joke and stuff, but he's mostly quiet, almost brooding. And even though he has a girlfriend all through the first four books, and he starts to get a girlfriend with Tina Morales, he still doesn't know how to handle things with women. And part of the reason of that is that when he was born, his mother died. And his father, he was born late in his father's life, and his father blamed Lansing for the death of his mother. And so he grew up in a very emotionless family. He got his mothering from the housekeeper, who was married to the ranch foreman. And that's the only mothering he got, and that's the only... And he had an older brother. And the older brother, you know, Lansing doesn't raise cattle or anything. He leases it to his neighbor because when he was raised, he hated working on the ranch. And it was going to go to his older brother anyway, who was 8 years older than him. And so he said, you know what? He went off to college. He discovered police work. He decided, you know what? This is what I want to do for the rest of my life. So he became a policeman down in Albuquerque, where the training is for police work in the state.
Right.
He met a woman. They got married. They had a kid. and his brother is killed in a car accident. So he has to come back to the ranch to help his father. His father has a stroke and then dies, and then Lansing inherits the ranch. But the problem is, he doesn't like ranching. He tries it for a few years, realizes he doesn't want to do that.
It's not for him.
He becomes a deputy for the county. And in the prequel, this is how his wife divorced him, because she hated being out on the ranch by herself. She liked the big city. She liked, if you consider Albuquerque a big city, she liked the big city, and she wanted to go back. So she's going back. She's taking her son with her. And Lansing's being left high and dry. So that's the background for Lansing. He doesn't know how to handle women. He does have a love affair in the first four books, and Tina becomes his paramour in the next set of books. But he really still doesn't know. And I realized, writing on book 10, that he tells Tina, "I love you." And that's the first time, 10 books, that he tells anybody that he loves them.
Yeah, you make it clear in The Blue Mustang that they never said those words.
No, he can't. Emotionally can't say that to anybody. The other recurring theme about Lansing is he does not like outside agencies coming in and horning in on his area, such as the FBI coming mm-hmm. in and taking over the murder on the Apache Reservation, and then coming in and bumping him for information. And he's always bumping heads with the State Bureau of Investigation, because they just treat him, you know, they walk into the county and they treat him like trash, and he has to remind them, "Hey, guess what? I'm the senior law enforcement here. You aren't.
Yeah.
You're just visitors, and you're going to go away."
Yep.
So that's the other thing, the recurring thing throughout mm-hmm. all the books, is Lansing's problem with higher authority, mm-hmm. even though in reality he's the highest authority in his county.
I got to know him just with this book. Really like him. He's a great guy.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. He's an amalgam of three persons in my life. One was my Uncle Clifford, who was a farmer in Kansas. And he was tall, and in his younger days, he looked like Errol Flynn. I mean, he had the mustache, and he was always worked out, you know, working on a farm. He was always in great shape. And then, I guess when he hit about 35 or 40, he had an accident. A tractor fell on his leg, and so he got fat. And in his later years, he looked like Ward Bond, which is fine, because I always thought Ward Bond was a great-looking guy. Lansing's full name is Clifford Allen mm-hmm. Lansing. So the Allen comes from my favorite cousin I had growing up, Allen Bates. Big guy, big husky guy, football player, great personality. And unfortunately, he died very young. He was 54. He inherited a bad heart from his dad. So he had two brothers, and both of them died very young. They never saw 60. So it's Clifford Allen, and then Lansing. Lansing is named after the actor Robert Lansing.
Oh.
I don't know if you remember
him
or not. Well, he was always quiet, mm-hmm. reserved, had that stare that
right.
could stare down a buffalo,
yep.
and said very little. And so that's where the Lansing comes from. And so, you know, if I could have my druthers, if I get somebody to play Lansing, it would be Robert Lansing. I would go pick him. But in today's world, I think the actor I would like to see him play, if he was available, would be Carl Urban.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
And the reason why I say that was Carl Urban played Woodrow Call of Lonesome Dove fame in a prequel called Comanche Moon, and he was really good in that.
That would be fun, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Even though he's a Kiwi, he would do a good job.
Do you want to read something for us from The Blue Mustang?
Yeah, like I said, I just a real short couple pages here. It starts off with Cotin speaking. "The Hawksin were the children of Black Sky and Earth Woman. They were the deities of the underworld. There were many Hawksin, white, yellow, blue, and many others. But the most powerful was the Black Hawksin. He was the supernatural being who fashioned all the animals of the earth from clay, including the horse. When the people first emerged from below, the world was filled with monsters. The War Twins, killer of enemies and Child of Water went to their father, the sun. They needed to slay all the monsters. He offered them everything the Hoxton had created, including the horse. The War Twins were more interested in lightning and sun rays and rainbow arrows, weapons they could use against the monsters. They saw no advantage to the horse. The War Twins did kill all the monsters, and the world was made safe for the people. But because of their choice, the horse was given to the white man. The white man came from far from the east. It was when he arrived that our people could be united with a gift from the Black Hoxton. Among the Navajo and many Apaches, the most sacred of the horses was the Blue Mustang. It is the horse the sun uses to ride across the sky. The Yanero and Oyero Apache knew the swiftest, strongest horse for battle was the black horse with a white mark on the face. The Kiowa Apache preferred the red horse, but the blue stallion was considered rare and sacred. Some believe he is there to protect all the other horses, for they were one of the greatest gifts from the Black Hoxton. Others believe, as I do, that the blue stallion is the guardian of all the creatures the Hoxton created. Frida thought about the long conversation she had with her grandfather the evening before. She had grown up hearing the Hickory of Creation stories. She knew by heart the mythology of the War Twins, how they made the mistake of not choosing the horse as a weapon against monsters, how the Apache people had to await the arrival of the white man to attain such a wonderful animal. When she first heard her grandfather talk about the mysterious blue roan he saw as a child, she thought he had exaggerated its importance. But as she grew older, she heard the Navajo stories about Turquoise Boy and how he first acquired the horse from Changing Woman. In all the Diné stories, the blue stallion held great importance. The creature was considered sacred throughout the Navajo and much of the Apache world. Conrado Coutin seemed very pleased that his granddaughter had finally seen the Blue Mustang. So few people knew it existed. She asked him why the stallion and his mares didn't show up in her photos. Conrado shrugged. Maybe they do not want their pictures taken. Maybe we can't take their pictures. Would God want his photo taken? The game and fish officer couldn't argue with the logic. Should I tell others I saw the Blue Mustang? Yes, you should. Grandfather Coutin nodded. There are so few of us who still tell the ancient stories. Today, when the young people hear them, they don't believe the stories are real. But if you tell them what you saw, they will know what the elders tell them is true. Frida wanted to ask how the Mustangs vanished without a trace. Then she reconsidered. If the horses could avoid having a photo taken, disappearing couldn't be much of a problem either.
Is there a true legend about the Blue Mustang?
There is in my book. Now, the Blue Mustang is the horse that the sun rides across the sky.
Okay.
So all the stuff that I talked about, the creation of the horse and the War Twins and stuff, that's all true.
Okay.
And that was the explanation. You know, the Apache absolutely fell in love with the horse. Mm-hmm. They became, you know, some of the best horsemen on the plains. And they couldn't understand why God didn't give them those darn horses to begin with. So they had to come up with a reason why God, Hoxton, created all these great things in the world and they didn't give it to the Apache.
Well, you must certainly do your research. And
But you know what? The first four books I wrote, I would research for three straight months. And after I got my notes down and everything, then I would start writing separately for 3 months. So it took a good 6 months to churn out a novel. Nowadays, with the Internet, it's so easy to look up something. I still do my research. You wouldn't believe the library of books I've got about Southwestern culture and the different tribes. And like the current book, I'm writing about the Santa Clara Kiowa people. The problem with that was I had to look all over the world to try to find a book about their history. And I finally dug one up. It was published in 83, I believe, by the New Mexico University Press. But they only printed a limited number, so that was not a cheap book to come by. But I got it, and I'm using it. But most everything you can find on the Internet.
That's right.
So that makes research a lot easier
right.
and quicker. So that's why I was able to churn out the first four books that have been published in the second half. I was able to do those in about 15 months.
Wow.
All five of them. So that was pretty quick. The only problem I had with that was last year I had a lot of bouts of pneumonia, and when I finished Moon of the Blue Mustang last year, I was exhausted and I was sick and ended up in the hospital and you know, Pink came close to having a nervous breakdown. I said, well, I don't want to do that again.
Right.
So I'm taking my time with my writing these days.
Yeah, you must have been writing all day, every day.
I was. Yeah. I was 7 days a week. I still write 7 days a week, but instead of trying to churn out 3 to 5 pages every day, I might do one or two and then go back and do some more research and taking my time. But I think I have a distinctive voice.
I do.
I made the decision that I was going to write a PG-13. I don't use a lot of swear words in my writing. And in fact, I was doing a book signing in Mississippi back, I think, when Shadowcatcher came out. A grandmother came up to me and she says, I want to thank you for what you've done for my grandson. And I said, what? And she said, you gave him the joy of reading. She said, we had Coyote Returns sitting around the house and he picked it up and he started reading. And she said, every day when he comes home from school now, he wants to read more on that book. And he says, is there another book I can read? So that made me feel pretty darn good.
Absolutely. They're definitely clean, but they're adults enjoy them just as much.
Well, and there are adult themes, and that's
right.
Why I'd say it's PG-13, because,
right.
You know, like bad guy steps over the wreckage of the ultralight and dispenses with the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a pretty thought
right.
of what he's doing. So I don't think kids 12 or under need to read about something like that. But on the other hand, I don't think my books are gory by
right.
any means.
I agree. You get the point across without having that gratuitous
beating them over the head. I have thoroughly enjoyed talking about myself.
Well, good. So is there anything else you want to add?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, I just found out last week that by popular demand, Speaking Volumes is going to republish my first 4 books in book form. So, and I'll tell you what, doesn't that cover just blow you away?
I was going to mention that. It's a gorgeous cover. It's really colorful. And
the staff artist for Speaking Volumes has done the cover on all 8 of my books, new covers for the old books. And I think every last one of them is breathtaking.
I did look at them at Amazon. I looked at the covers,
okay.
And they're all just gorgeous.
Yes, they are. They catch your eye, and you go, wow, this must be a good book.
Right.
And then they find out it is.
And that was Micah Hackler talking about his Sheriff Lansing mysteries and Moon of the Blue Mustang. This is Tracy Hales Vass with Right on 4 Corners on KSJE 90.9 FM in Farmington, New Mexico.